Welcome to the Armada podcast, where we are focusing in on DAO governance. Let's hop into the show. If you could start with who you are and what you're working on.
My name's Nick Elmond, and I'm working on finance.vote, which we're phrasing as a kind of governance infrastructure platform. So we're aiming to be the kind of Google App Suite for DAOs. So we're building a suite of apps. People are finding it a little bit confusing at the moment. So we're kind of finding ways to kind of rationalize what we're doing because it's a little bit different than what people are used to. But we've got this kind of umbrella concept, which is finance.vote. And we have a bunch of sub applications, other .vote applications that we've got an auction, for example, that is a price discovery mechanism for new assets. We've got prediction markets, and we've got a suite of applications that fall into this second layer governance system, as well as things like liquidity mining. So we're doing a bit of everything.
Yeah, the site definitely, to your point, is it's broad, and you're obviously painting a broad picture. And you know, consumers, I can buy that they're like, hey, like, what is the very simple thing that I'm doing? But you guys are super interesting, so I'm happy that you're joining the show to kind of talk a little bit about it. And for anyone listening, we did post a longer article this morning going into governance optimization that you've written that I think is super awesome, and we'll get a chance to talk about that. But I'd like to ask you, which fictional character would you like to have dinner with?
Ooh, that would probably be Richard Feynman, who's my favorite physicist and was a real inspiration to me.
Yeah, he's incredible mind. I've read a couple of his books, one of the biographies, and awesome guy.
Yeah, surely you're joking. Mr. Feynman's a great read for anyone who's not read it. And I think it's his mind. It's like, you know, he got obsessed on ants, so learned everything there is about ants and ended up writing a book on it. And he got into lock picking and became a master locksmith. And I think it's that kind of attitude that's just followed me around. I think great guy.
Yeah, love that. And one of the things I personally took away from it was his down to earthness. There was a story that he talked about going to sort of a stale dinner party, and he ended up, you know, doing science experiments with the little kids, you know, when all the adults were talking about politics or like whatever they were going on about. And he was like, I want to do some science and teach kids amazing things. And like, I tried to emulate that in my own life. So I love that answer.
Yeah, absolutely.
So could you explain what second layer governance means to you?
Yeah, so second layer governance is this concept that I'm trying to build, which is about, I mean, it's based on around the issues in the DeFi space that I was sort of picking up on at the time, sort of during the DeFi summer period. Well, there's a few sort of very major DAO failures where sort of on-chain decisions were made, real smart contract, reality shifting changes, and which just ended the game, essentially. So really high stakes decisions that led to inflation bugs, that led to sort of critical smart contract failures, layer one decisions. And for me, those decisions should be like abstracted away from the chain. And into this kind of second layer where there's a chain of provenance. So when you're doing an execution governance vote that changes the smart contracts in some critical way, that you're very sure that it's going to execute properly, and that there's enough consensus for it to happen. So it's really just to this idea that there should be a build up to a layer one decision that happens in this second layer, which is much more about rough consensus.
I see. That's an interesting way of framing that. And you talked in the article that that we just referenced earlier about the government optimization. You put together some kind of example stories of some of these, like sort of, I think it was like a minimalization person, and they were saying like they made these decisions and they just kind of they left the community, hands are up, there's nothing they can do about it. Is it decisions like that that also could be applied to second layer, or am I trying to merge two different concepts together?
They're related. I think that, so that article I wrote is to try and, I sort of framed it as nuancing the blockchain governance narrative, which at the moment is heavily framed around this governance minimization idea, which I think is largely due to Bitcoin being the dominant asset for so long and the paradigm in their governance system, which is, you know, that you should not do as little governance as possible. And it should be, you should eliminate humans from the game and ossify everything into automated software. And I'm trying to reframe this into you should optimize between these extremes. So the other end of the extreme is that all you do is governance, and you just spend your whole time in committees and never get anything done. And you know, and people actually kind of like it that way because it keeps everyone busy, but it's not very effective. And for me, there's this kind of sweet spot. So yeah, they're related in the sense that this second layer suite of tools that we're building is to help us find that optimization point, to help us sort of iterate through these extremes. The end game is to get things automated and minimized, but you have to sort of discover that. And systems, governance systems are a bit more, if you want to do what I could consider post-money blockchain solutions, you need more nuanced governance than what Bitcoin does.
Yeah, that's certainly, I'm relatively early in this journey of the podcast, but it certainly seems to me that there's sort of these two mindsets and kind of what you're talking about around this, hey, here's kind of how Bitcoin has done it and how we could do it. And there's sort of a vision, aspirational kind of view of it. And then there's sort of this other group of people that are being very pragmatic about it. And one thing I enjoyed about your writing was sort of the journey and how we find that balance. And the other thing I took away too is like, hey, you know, it doesn't have to be one or the other. There's really could be a blend and time function, I think, super interesting of how do we get there over time? And then how do different organizations find their niches that solve for that? And I think one of the terms that I've been hearing that is really kind of connecting with me is this idea of a digital organization, and to kind of take a step away from a DAO, the aspirational framing of that, and just say, oh, digital organization. Yes, there's going to be big digital organizations that are very centralized. There's going to be big ones that are decentralized and very, you know, flat and Bitcoin and minimal. And then there's going to be everything in between. And what I love about what you're doing is sort of thinking about the process and how we get there and the tooling that we can do that. And I just think that's a really cool approach. And so you got a fan in me and how you do it.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on there. I think there's organizations that, based around what they're trying to do, will fall on this continuum in different spaces. There are things that are absolutely meant to be as minimized as possible, you know, like maybe some of these algorithmic stable coins, for example. But there's broader use case sets that need a different thing. And I think we just need to find a better language for talking about how these things will run.
Yes, certainly. And we are, I can already tell you that there, yeah, a lot of good words and phrases being floated around, and
I'm
some
sure
thick, some don't, and some, yeah, so it'll be interesting. Speaking of phrases, there was a phrase that you had highlighted in the finance.vote that we talked about mini DAOs, and it just caught my attention. And I was just like, could you talk to me about what a mini DAO is to you?
Yeah. So pretty much tapping into what you were talking about, what's this second layer idea? And it's, when you're trying to find this minimization point, which is, let's say, your end game, where you want to ossify the system so it can run in a decentralized fashion, you want to almost spin up temporary substructures inside a governance system. So now I've done this inside a, you know, big meat space organizations where we'd set up like what would be a working group, for example. We've got this thing that needs shorting in a short space of time. Let's set this up. With the intention of winding it down in the future, but give it's a decentralized organization that's not meant to be around forever. You know, our goal is to decentralize, so we don't want to have too many of these power structures lying around. What if we've got this quick setup? Let's spin this up really quickly, get this job done, and then wind it down. And that's how I'm conceptualizing what these mini DAOs are. And then some of them might, you know, grow into big DAOs, you know, if they become important. And what we're trying to do is create these voting tools that allow people to just quickly reach consensus and be agile. So these small, agile DAO structures, and that's kind of where my head's at the moment with what they are.
Yeah, I love the phrasing. I'm a big fan of Orca Protocol. They're calling, I think, an idea of that pods. I think you describe sort of in the meat space as sort of, you know, I've heard SWAT teams or sort of these you know, agile teams or whatever. And so yours sounds that there's a explicit time duration as it relates to like a goal, right? Might be a month, a quarter, that type of time frame, as opposed to years. Whereas what I'm hearing from like Yearn and Orca Protocol, sort of these more long-term structures of sort of team units in order to make decisions within a specific domain. So product decisions, marketing decisions, treasury decisions, things like that. And so mini DAOs in your mind are a little bit more, it's like, hey, we have this very kind of acute situation, problem, solution that we're going to go accrue that, and that thing might wind up and might wind down. But you suggested, though, perhaps it grows into a broader thing. So is it attacking sort of an initiative, and then the time frame might be short, but it can expand to be long? Or is it sort of more, I guess I just threw this pod idea at you, but how do you think about maybe the differences between a mini DAO and sort of a long-term pod or sort of mini committee that is given an objective or a longer period of time? Are they different, the same? How do you think about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think the way I'm free, the reason why I want these almost to start off town time bounded is because, you know, in organizations, there's like this, there's almost this like this tend towards entropy, this kind of breakdown into things will turn up that stay there forever that you don't want them to. So I kind of have in mind these structures to start with a planned obsolescence. I think this is one of the things that DAOs should be thinking about. For example, we've got a plan to, you know, this exit to community idea that gets abused sometimes, but is the end game. You know, that the launch team, if they're planning to stick around for a decade, it's because they're not planning to decentralize things properly. So right. I think these structures I have in mind is that they're meant to be around for a short period of time. And if you come in thinking this is what we're going to get done, and it ends at that point, then you're putting yourself on the right path to decentralization. But yeah, I think that I like the yearn. I would sort of did a couple of tweet storms on the YFI group. I think the yearn team are, you know, really leading the space and that kind of stuff. And I like the Y team structure. And I'm sort of in their little governance group and spoke to that and saw that arise. And it's a really nice sort of paradigm. I think where we're going for is to almost have these kind of looser structures and let things emerge a little bit more. So we don't want to, we frame it as almost like pop-up digital democracies. And these things should have the, people should be able to design these things in any way they want. So they can stitch together these little apps, use them, build a little system that's bespoke to their, to what they want to achieve. So we're not trying to build in our thoughts of what the organization should look like, but we've got the tools there to build it in the way that you want to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that is a great distinction. You certainly seem fired from situations in meat spaces, as you called it. And I'm obviously racking through a bunch of different examples. One example, I feel like that the time frame, there was a startup that I was a founder of, and there was a party committee that got created for a big party that we were going to do. And then, of course, that party committee stuck around for years, and it was just such a waste of time, and it had no goal, no leader. And I'm thinking about like there was a need in that short function. It was like, hey, this is a, you know, 1 year annual company retreat. We got to figure out what the hell we're going to do. A ton of utility in that group of people trying to figure that out. And then beyond that, all of a sudden it became into something entirely different. So I love this idea of planned obsolescence, which is, I totally understand the spirit and the principle behind what you're talking about there. And I've seen it in my own real world. This is kind of a random question that I didn't give you in preparation, but what inspires you from sort of the real world and the traditional kind of meat space world to have wanted to think about these problems? Like, is there something specific that has kind of got you down this path?
Yeah, there is. I think so. It's this idea of collective intelligence. So I, as a physicist for a background, then drifted into working in education. So I ended up teaching teachers, if you like, for a long period of time, and ended up as an associate dean, where it was my job to sort of get teachers to learn better and learn from each other. And I saw throughout the years, I sort of built some of these hierarchical organization structures inside big institutions, and saw what happens when you put people in a room and, you know, organize it properly. And the problem solving power of these things is quite immense. So I believe in this collective intelligence idea. It's just that it needs filtering dynamics. The idea that you could do this on the open internet, where it scales beyond institutional boundaries to potentially millions of people collaborating on something, struck me as something that would absolutely change the world. If we figure out how to work together properly, I think something pretty magical might happen. We're just missing the tools to do it. And blockchains have this, new architectures of trust. There's a great book called that I think hits the nail on the head. you need to be able to manage this, all these pseudonymous people really from all over the world to be able to come together and work on something in a shared way. So it's that idea, I think. I believe in collective intelligence and that there's a whole untapped future of collaboration technologies that could really profoundly be transformative, I think.
That's powerful. So let's talk about finance.vote's roadmap. And if you could just sort of, I'll put a link to it in the show notes so people can take a look at, there's an illustration that sort of outlines it. But can you just sort of talk about that particular roadmap and sort of what that looks like and what's kind of driving that?
Yeah. So it took a while to land this, but we, if you sort of, let's say roadmaps are typically linear. And, you know, you stick your roadmap, this is what we're going to do, A, B, C, D, E, F. You're almost disempowering the community from the day one. But if you end up with a blank slate, nothing gets done at all. So this is our middle ground. It's our optimization take, if you like. So we built it almost like a skill tree, like in an RPG game, mm-hmm. where you can open up this. We've got three pillars. We've got one on prediction market discovery, one on second layer governance, one on social trading. And it opens up in this route, and eventually we're going to let our users steer us around this thing as a core team. So the votes will be held pretty soon, actually. We can say, look, there's like 12 or 13 apps in here. Which do you want us to do next? So these ones are precursors to others. And we've built all those precursors now. So we've got five apps ready to go. And now it's going to be up to the users where we go next on this roadmap. And that's going to be part of this optimization philosophy.
Pretty unique way of thinking about it. It's certainly having managed product in a couple of companies in the past, like, you know, I typically organized it by sort of like problem solution kind of opportunity space, right? It's like, hey, this is sort of a, you know, we call it like a down arrow thing, like, let's improve a particular issue that's hurting us. This is sort of a greenfield, you know, opportunity. What I love about that is like, I never thought about it in a tree structure. I always just thought about it as sort of like a, you know, buckets, and then work with the leadership team to make that decision.
We spin up teams to be able to, you know, parallel develop this thing using the governance tools that we're building to kind of dog food it into existence, if you like. And we've already got new apps that aren't on that roadmap that the community are talking about that they want. I think it's, can't wait to see where it's going to go in a year time.
And how can our listeners be helpful in what you're working on?
So we are looking for people to get involved, really. So if you check our Twitter out, at finance.vote with the word dot in the middle, we've got a want to work for a DAO thing. And this is a very open, we've left it, you know, put some crazy job titles in there. We're just open to anyone just looking to come and get involved, be part of the community, explore new ways of using these voting tools. We're just about to open up our voting system. So it's a really great time to get involved. So yeah, just come and get involved, find us on Telegram, find us on Twitter, and just ask us questions and be part of the community.
And what has brought up a question in my mind of one thing that I've been kind of sifting through is this idea of working for a DAO. And one of the things I found interesting is that I think the average person in this world, even very, very talented people, they've been conditioned to think about a job in a very particular way. And so I think a lot of them, you know, as they think about crypto and DAOs and all that, you know, they sort of like, oh, I'm going to go find a job in it, right? And so what they end up finding is that they're really finding labs and, you know, private institutions that are contributing to these open protocols like Adapter Labs or something like that, where they're like, oh, like I'm going to go get a job and go do this, but it's actually not like a pure DAO job. Do you think that we are going to enter into a world where we will see more traditional quote unquote jobs in the DAO space that have, you know, sort of a fixed income and potential benefits and, you know, this sort of structure, or is it always going to be a little grant proposal structure and kind of compensation through contributing to the actual protocol? Like, do you see a bridge between those two worlds?
Yeah, I think there's going to be new paradigms in the way we consider jobs that will emerge in this DAO system. Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people who've like worked for DAOs in the past, and you know, they've been in this situation where they were planning on having money come in, and then they didn't win a vote, and then essentially they were left stranded without money. And that's and the only way you can do that is if you're sort of independently wealthy anyway, and take these kind of like speculative risks, which would be a shame if it stays in that sort of framing. But the conventional idea of, you know, contract, you know, sign up and having salaried work and in the conventional, you know, job description kind of format, I don't think works for DAOs either. So I do think there's going to be this space in the middle where you can get commitment from, it'll start in kind of informal structures, very emergent, but then there will be spaces in DAOs to have much more structured commitments. And I think you can do that with, you know, crypto economics as well. I think you can be sure that you've got an allocation being fed to you over a year. I think there'll be new models that arise, and increasingly people will move into this more gig economy type things. It might be that people work for several DAOs.
Right.
But I do think we are going to move into a much more decentralized mode of working into the future. I think it's fairly inevitable, and people will roam the world, and the digital nomad thing will be bigger. And I think DAOs are going to have a huge place in that. But yeah, I think, again, it'll be everything on that spectrum. I think that we've got just an untapped, the book on decentralized organizations hasn't been written yet.
Right.
So yeah, anything's possible. And if people want a certain kind of arrangement, I'm sure that DAOs are going to create them.
Yes. Yeah. It strikes me that there's, you know, the big tech companies have obviously discovered this, which is, you know, hire these incredibly talented engineers, pay them way more than anyone possibly could give them these nice, you know, equity grants, mm-hmm. and then obviously drive more profit off of that collective work than you paid out. And yet, you know, as long as you're retaining the top 10% or whatever they're trying to do, that model has worked for the traditional tech ones. And then it's now conditioned a whole class of workers to sort of think in that way, that, hey, I just show up, you know, the performance review, as long as I'm writing good code, all that stuff, I don't have to worry about it. And I think about like the sales organizations, right, where sales is built entirely different. It says, come in, we're going to give you a decent base, but you might generate 50%, 100%, 200% extra on top of your base, maybe 400%, even more, depending on how you actually perform as a salesman. And it strikes me that maybe that is maybe the entry point for these types of roles, which is these DAOs that probably have treasuries large enough to say, hey, you're a developer, we're going to come in, we're going to pay you a necessary amount to cover your base living expenses without having to worry about it, call it 50K, mm-hmm. 75K, whatever it is, which is in some cases a fifth, a fourth, you know, a sixth of what they might be able to work at a traditional thing. And then the protocol and the tokens back, the sales incentive, they're like, hey, be part of the DAO culture. And it strikes me that that might be the right entry point to get a lot of these amazing engineers who don't have the independent wealth yet to take that leap, as opposed to going to the Amazons and the Google. So maybe that's the path. We'll see.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, you know, working for DAOs, because there's crypto assets involved, there is this incredible high upside to some of these things. And I think some of those stories will make it out, where people make life-changing money in these things. And I think that'll attract new people in. But yeah, I think we'll find just ways of thinking about it that we've never thought of before. And I think we'll start to see that over the next couple of years.
Well, I appreciate your time joining the podcast. If you remind everyone your Twitter handle and where to find you. And thanks again for joining the show.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to the Armada podcast. We would greatly appreciate a review in your favorite podcast player. And if you want to stay in the loop even further, head to armada.fm, where we have a repo. You can check out what we're doing and what we're learning along the way. Love to see you there. Thank you.